Welcome to Book Talk from Scottish Book Trust. I'm Paul Gallagher, and this month on Book Talk, I'm joined by the science fiction author and writer-in-residence on their MA for Creative Writing at Napier University, Ken MacLeod, and editor and literary events organiser, Oisin Murphy-Lawless. The book we're discussing this month is The Quarry by Ian Banks, the final novel from the greatly loved and respected Scottish writer, who sadly passed away in early June this year, just days before The Quarry was published. The Quarry is narrated by Kit, a socially awkward, mildly autistic 18-year-old who lives with and looks after his cancer-stricken father, Guy. The story involves a last-weekend reunion of Guy's old uni pals before the house he and Kit live in is demolished to make way for an expansion of the adjacent quarry. This event is one that Guy is unlikely to live long enough to see. As the weekend progresses, Kit observes their old friends hanging out, talking and arguing, and also becomes aware of a particular videotape that they are all keen to get their hands on, for reasons none of them are willing to explain. A tape that Guy may have hidden somewhere in the house. So, Ken, I'll come to you first. The Quarry initially seems a uniquely difficult read. I've certainly spoken to people with mixed feelings about whether they want to read it or not, mainly because of the perceived closeness of Guy's situation with that of Ian Banks himself in the final stages of his life. So I guess the first question is it a difficult book to read?
I didn't find it so. I mean, I found it personally quite poignant to read, but it's not at all difficult. In that sense, I think that in the first instance, we have to remember that Ian wrote most of it before his diagnosis, before he had any idea that anything was wrong. And so the whole conception of it was not in it, you know, a reflection of his personal situation. The thing that I found difficult in reading it would be that I would come to some turn of phrase or some vivid image and chuckle and think, I must tell Ian how much, and then But in terms as a novel, it's basically a fairly easy, almost a strange thing to say about a novel about something so grim, but it's actually a fairly light read.
Yeah, and just continuing on that, the tone of it is, as you sort of hinted at there, it's very funny, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a good deal of humour in it, partly from Kit's particular take on the world and the way he sees things or sometimes fails to see things. There is also a degree of black humour, if you like, in Guy's rants against the injustice of the world and of his situation. It's not a grim book in any sense.
Oisin, what was your take on the book? Did you have any trepidation in going into it?
No, I don't think so. Within the first couple of pages of the book, I thought to myself, well, we're with a character that Ian can do very well. And I did find myself actually almost immediately casting my mind back to the sort of very distinctive first-person narrative of The Wasp Factory. But also in terms of its setup and the idea of old friends coming back together again, I mean, in any of his sort of more contemporary novels, it's not uncommon to have those there. And it felt very, very personable and very easy to read. And I didn't really find myself, knowing as well the sort of chronology of when it was written, I didn't find myself drawing on too many connections between it, except maybe to think, when you finish that up and then you now know that you find yourself in the situation that Ian found himself in, I wonder, did it give him pause for reflection to himself? But I didn't find it very hard to read at all, no. Like Ken said, there was bits of it which subsequently found me just being sort of quite reflective. It provoked a fair degree of reflection.
Ken, you referred to the fact that it's in some ways quite light, and although it's dealing in heavy subject matter. And I've got to admit that when I first started reading, I felt that it was perhaps a little slight, and I wasn't really sure if the substance was going to be there. But as I continued to read, the more I progressed, the more I found that it's actually a very layered story, and it's perhaps fair to say that it's deceptively slight, because the setup initially feels maybe familiar, but then there's a lot of interesting things in it about things that you might expect, like aging and relationships and those kind of things. But something that interested me in it was there's stuff about different technologies in the book. The existence of a videotape, living in a largely digital world, that's an interesting thing to sort of feature heavily. But also the fact that Kit plays this online adventure game, Hero Space. And there's interesting stuff there about how his life in the real world is hugely affected. And he even says, I really live a lot of my time in this digital world.
I wonder, I mean, to pun rather badly, I would say that the technology is a device about, I think, the passage of time as it's experienced in the life of a person about the age of Guy and of Ian and of myself. In other words, we've seen so many of these technologies that were each the latest thing become obsolete. And that sense of obsolescence as you go on is, I'm sure, a kind of little undercurrent there. The use of the adventure fantasy world is harder to evaluate. I mean, on the one hand, Ian himself knew very well the appeal of, you know, immersive virtual reality type games. Although, as far as I know, he never played multiplayer online role-playing games. He got very much into Civilization, and until he found it was taking far too much time and attention away from writing, and rather dramatically broke the CD. He even wrote on a computer that wasn't connected to the internet, which I can say to anyone who's an aspiring writer that this is a very good idea. The thing is that, in a way, the Hero Space stuff, it plays a part in the plot and the way in which Kit finds himself hurt and let down by a person that he perhaps trusts most. And it also kind of normalizes him, because the reasons why it appeals to him are very much the reasons why these games appeal to the rest of us, as it were, to a lot of quote-unquote normal kids. It is a nice reflection that his rather odd brain chemistry or whatever it is actually gives him something of a competitive advantage in this virtual world.
And speaking, Oisin, of Kit, we got an interesting comment on Twitter. Southside Book Club, in fact, said that the book is like the grown-up older brother to the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime.
I can see the sense of the comparison, because it's a character who's learning to recognize the differences between himself and a lot of other people in the world, and learning to recognize that he can still be a part of that world, even if he prefers to stand on the outside and observe a bit more. So there's not nearly the same sense of bewilderment, I think. I mean, I think as a narrative voice, it's funny, the force of it really struck me almost within about the first five or six pages, because I thought to myself, well, here's a kid who, well, he's not a kid, he's a teenager, he's growing up to be an adult. He's happy with numbers and physical things, but he also likes quite sort of close, careful environments. And there, I almost had echoes of Frank from The Wasp Factory, but he's not nearly as lost for a sense of purpose. There isn't that same sense of impending catastrophe with Kit. He's feeling his way out there in the world and seeing how older people are working, but in quite a safe environment as well, because he's in this house on his own with his dad. The bits which I actually found struck hardest were the bits where there was just already, at the age of 18 or 19, he's already getting quite weary of you felt sometimes just the sheer weight of having to deal with his dad and the physical weight of it in terms of, you know, having to do things which Kit himself really doesn't like doing. Kit's very careful and very clean, and so having to deal with his dad in the toilet, that's a horrible thing for him to do. He's recognizing that actually, you know, there's a mental weight to all of this as well, and having his dad just get really angry with him, and in some cases perhaps not recognizing that anger, but there's a certain maybe poignance to the fact that he's having to learn how other people react and interact, and he's suddenly realizing his dad's actually been really hurtful and mean. There were times when I wondered whether the tone of the voice was a bit inconsistent, until I recognised he's not very static, you know, he's growing. He's growing through the course of the book. And I suppose, you know, there was a part of me which went, you know, it's another coming-of-age novel.
I found him a very easy character to identify with. When I look back, actually, at my own teenage years, that feeling of deep frustration at people just not spelling out what it was they actually wanted. and leaving me to guess it. I mean, there is a suspicion sometimes that adolescents go through a period when their ability to read social situations is quite damaged, even compared to how they were as children. That feeling of wishing people would just be sensible and spell things out and not be ambiguous, I find it very easy to identify with, actually.
I think that's one of the strengths of the novel, is the observations of the sort of relationships of the characters. But what did you think about, Oisin, about the rest of the kind of supporting cast, if you like? In some way, you know, this is perhaps a bit harsh, but in some way they're a bit like a sitcom cast.
I think there's one of the characters in particular, Ali, who I wanted to see develop more to get a better sense of how she could fit into that group. She's markedly different. She seems a lot more aggressive and just very, very much more a go-getter. All the other characters, what fascinates me about them is, and what struck me about a lot of Ian's contemporary novels, he's really good at pulling together groups of quite successful, quite well-to-do middle-class folk, just reflecting on them at different points in their lives. So at this point, you know, they're all in their 40s. They're starting to question what it is they're doing. Should they be going off in other directions? Although individually, perhaps, they might be perhaps a bit too quickly sketched. And there was a part of me which would have liked to have seen a more gradual development. I guess the Crow Road comes to mind. You see numbers of characters in a family coming together and developing slowly, bit by bit, year by year. And you don't quite get the opportunity to do that in this because it's a briefer novel. I think as a group, they do work quite well together if you recognise them as a group, if you see what I mean. It seems to me Ian's always been very good at writing about characters who you look at and you think, well, how do all these people get on? Surely they must just be smacking heads constantly. There should be more blood involved here. And yet, he's just quite good at recognising that actually we do get on with a very vast and disparate group of people, and people who have a broader range of friends are generally the better for it.
And there is lots of, just like you said, there's lots of compelling stuff in the novel, which is just basically conversation and argument and contemporary cultural references, especially in the first half of the book. Ken, would you say that, like, in terms of plot, it's not really a book with a driving narrative?
It's not a book with a driving narrative. It holds your attention throughout, but the pleasure of it is not in wondering how things are going to work out. In the comparison of the cast to a sitcom cast is quite apt, but it's actually somewhat better than that, because I think one of the things that Ian was very good at was keeping up to the moment. The book is about a young guy who is looking forward in whatever way. He's looking forward to life and to doing something in the world, and looking forward with some dread to some of it, but nevertheless moving forward, and encountering a lot of people, including his father, who are spending a lot of time looking back at not quite having made as much of himself as he had wanted to. With the others, they've been individually successful, but the world is still almost certainly not what they were hoping for when they were students. They were students back in the 90s who are a very different breed from the students of the 70s, but who, they were the angry brigade compared to students now.
Towards the end, Guy is given several opportunities to go give some real full-on rants. How much should we read into that in terms of Ian Banks' own voice? Is he taking the opportunity to let off steam?
As Ian said, and as far as I know, was his last published interview, the one with Stuart Kelly in The Guardian, he made the point that his view of his own life looking back is not at all the same as Guy's. He felt he'd had a great life and done a great deal, and he was right. But he did say that when he actually got the diagnosis and he was sitting, literally sitting there in the hospital with his laptop ready, he wrote the most embittered rant in the book, because he thought, I might as well use this, you know, I'm a writer, I use everything. So this feeling of, you know, utter shock and of the world being, his world being just changed in an instant, was, he thought, I might as well put the energy of this into the book, which was a brave thing to do, and I think quite characteristic of him. But some of Ian's own opinions come through, but there are actually far less rants than I was expecting, to be honest. Certainly it's nothing like, for example, Dead Air, in which there are pages upon pages of rants in Ian's own voice. Basically, the main character in Dead Air is a left-wing talk radio shock jock. That's his his thing, and there is nothing like that here. It's just short and acerbic, really.
There's actually multiple perspectives quite often in The Quarry, so you do feel Ian's perspective coming through, but then I think you get a counter-argument as well, which I think is interesting and adds that dimension of reality to these discussions. Okay, so as readers who are both very familiar with the body of Ian Banks' work, how do you think The Quarry fits in? It's fair to say, it's clear that it isn't a kind of summation of a life's work type novel. What is it? How do we look at The Quarry in the context of Ian Banks' whole work?
It's odd because in a lot of ways it's a commendably brief novel. It doesn't try hard to outstay its welcome. And it almost feels like it was a set of observations on that process of that we all go through, becoming older and reflecting on where you've been. But I almost kind of felt like, because there were strands and there were elements that I'd seen in other bits of his work earlier, coincidentally enough, around the time that when I was at college, I was reading a fair bit of Ian, I kind of almost felt like he was thinking about these things for a little bit, and then he was going to maybe come back to them again later in another 10 years. He'd use a not dissimilar setup to just examine people as they're getting a bit older again. It's an interesting novel for me because I do feel when I'm thinking of, he always has this great interesting circles of friends, and it reminded me most of Crow Road and Complicity, actually, which is funny because Complicity has a massive plot running right the way through it. But it is, Complicity also has the main character having to think quite hard about his relationships with his friends as he's growing older. And obviously the Crow Road's not quite the same because it's more of a family chronicle, but there is this sense of a young man sort of looking at older people around him and the decisions they've made and the sense of disappointment or resolution, sticking to his beliefs. I've always been a great fan of Prentice McCown's dad. Wish I'd known Prentice McCown's dad. He's almost the antithesis of Guy in a way. He's a person who's very much very sure of his beliefs, very sure that what he has done in the world is the right thing up to literally the point of his death when he gets zapped off the side of a church saying bad things about the idea of an omniscient deity. I don't think it's certainly not, you know, it's nothing like a summation, but it's interesting to see it as a reflection on people, sort of people younger than Ian getting older. But, you know, Ian must have been through that in his 40s as well. I have to say as well, it's quite odd for me to read this over the weekend and a bit that I did read it since I just turned 40. And I popped home to Dublin to meet up with two close friends of mine. And, you know, we all read Ian at college. I could recognise an awful lot of the book in me. So I think if you're in that age of sort of late 30s, early to mid 40s, you'll find it a very easy book because you'll be having these thoughts and reflections yourself. And you're going, is it the next age onwards? Or are we just doomed now to spend the next 30 years wasting our lives wondering what could have been? Also, I think is part of the point of the book, which is, that's a phenomenal waste.
The end of the book, it does leave you with a sense of life going on, really, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Indeed, even of a fresh start. A broken relationship being healed, the main character, you know, widening his world. So yeah, I think it does end on a positive note.
And in terms of the question I asked earlier about where we see The Quarry fitting in the sense of Ian's body of work.
Well, he used to have a division between, not just between his mainstream writing and his science fiction, but within his mainstream writing, he had a division which he called nice and nasty. He tried to alternate the nice with the nasty. Eventually, he just stopped even doing the nasty ones. The Quarry, I think, belongs with, say, The Crow Road and Whit, and his previous novel, Stonemouth, in the nice category, despite some of the grim nature of the central character's predicament, of Guy's predicament, and the sad circumstance of the book's own writing. It's not a dark book. And I think it won't be seen as one of Ian's major works, and he was very well aware of that, and I think said so. He would have liked to have gone out with a bang, all guns blazing in a culture starship of some kind, you know. But that was not to be, and I think it's a a worthy addition to his work. It's not one of his major works. It's a worthy addition. It's a good novel, one well worth reading and rereading, in fact, and something he was proud of.
We could obviously say much more, and there is much more being said about Ian Banks, but that's where we're going to close this book talk discussion on The Quarry. But we're keen to hear your thoughts too. If you agree or disagree with any of our perspectives, or you want to add a completely different angle on The Quarry, please get in touch with us at Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us under Scottish Book Trust, or comment directly on this podcast page at scottishbooktrust.com. And that's all from Book Talk this month. Thank you very much to my guests, Ken McLeod and Oisin Murphy-Lawless. Ken, what are you working on at the moment that people should be looking out for?
Well, I'm working on, in the sense of looking forward to receiving the copy edits of a novel called Descent, which is due out next year and is a near future science fiction novel. I can't say more than that about it at the moment, though.
Excellent. We'll look forward to it. And Oisin, if people want to hear more from you...
I'll actually be spending the bulk of the next year and a half working with Scottish Centre of Pen International, Scottish Pen, organising a series of events in the run-up to the Commonwealth Games. But in the unlikely event that people wanted to badger me, I can usually be found on Twitter at Bikes and Boots.
OK, well, look out for the new Book Talk Interviews podcast in 2 weeks' time at scottishbooktrust.com and iTunes. Until then, for Scottish Book Trust, I'm Paul Gallagher. Goodbye. Book Talk is produced by Colin Fraser, with music by Sam Gallagher.